My nose filled with the musk-sweet spice of androgyne and the dry demon tang of Hellasphront agent.
Eve might need me. Or she might be using me as a distraction, just as Lucifer had. But Japhomel definitely needs me right now, for once. If this will create a little chaos to cover his path, I'm all for it.
My sword blade dipped, my wrist relaxing.
All right. Tell me how. Use small words so I can understand.
What?
McKinley's pale cheeks turned crimson.
You can't just...
I glared at him. He shut his mouth.
Anton can explain much of it. I can fill in any gaps in his knowledge.
A flash of something hard and delighted bolted through Eve's eyes. Almost too quickly for me to identify.
It is not so difficult once one knows how.
Her hands relaxed and she smiled. A thin, small, cruel curve of her sculpted lips. She still looked nothing like Doreen, and just a little like Lucifer. But that tiny smile, fleeting as it was still so familiar, a chill touched my spine.
Maybe she's my daughter after all.
After they had gone, McKinley stared at the empty hall for a few moments, then swept the door closed. He stayed where he was for a moment, his left hand braced against the knob, his shoulders dropped, shaking under his torn shirt.
Are you insane?
Do you really want to know?
I looked down at the tarot cards scattered around my booted feet. My heel rested on the devil card, my weight pitched forward in combat readiness. I sank back down from the balls of my feet, and my heel ground sharply into the floor.
McKinley.
Dear gods, I sound like Japhomel.
I'd really like to know what the hell you're thinking, Valentine. Japh should have been back by now. He's gone and we're fucked. And you just made it worse by agreeing to openly throw down the gauntlet?
He leaned into the door. Outside our bolt hole, the dark side inhaled, catching its breath before the plunge.
The gauntlet? Like the cuff I used to wear, saying I was Lucifer's errand girl?
I ground my heel down even more sharply as the thought made my stomach twinge. The darkness inside my head revolving on oiled bearings, silent and deadly.
Okay, Danny. Think your way out of this one.
My brain began to work again.
Please, tell me you have a way to get in touch with Van.
The Ildesit is now underground, and the spires of Notre Dame melt into the landfill top of the cavern of Plaus Cathedral. Unlike most of the dark side, the Ildesit runs with crimson light. From low-heat sublamps during the night and the sublamps plus incandescence during the day, or whenever the city's central AI tells the lamps it's between dawn and dusk on the surface. The Ill is also one of the bigger thoroughfares, so mini air bikes and slickboards are popular. The air unsteady and trembling with anti-grav wash from reactive paint on the boards and bikes. The skates in the dark side are different than slick tribes in most other parts of the world, being lethal and filthy instead of just clannish and unhygienic. A gang of dark side slick tribers can strip a corpse in seconds, or a live victim in under a minute. Citizens are just lucky the organ trade isn't on fire in Hegemony Europa like it is in, say, Nuevo Rio. We crouched in the shadows of a refuse-strewn alley. There's really no smell like a main street in the dark side. Maintenance bots come through at regular intervals, but the constant ambient temperature and the volatile hover wash make it a breeding ground for all sorts of smells, including the effluvia of humanity. We melted out of the shadows and crossed the street, McKinley flanking me. The crowd was thick, but not overly so, and nobody went up the steps of the Notre Dame without having serious business. As soon as it became obvious we were heading for the old temple, the milling pedestrians, darksiders and regular Paradisians out for a night of slumming fun, suddenly avoided contact with us, a path opening without comment. I wished it didn't feel so depressingly normal. Notre Dame rose broken-toothed and slump-shouldered, but still beautiful, vibrating with uneasy energy. If Paradise had a heart,
It was probably the floating Arc Triomphe, retrofitted with hover cushions and a popular tourist destination. But if the dark side had a pulsing heart, it was the Lady, as the Notre Dame was known, an ancient Christer temple slumped into the rubble and wreckage, waiting for the next turn of the great wheel. She'd seen pagan sacrifices and the rise and fall of the religions of submission. She was where a small group of scions had barricaded themselves during one of the last battles of the 70 Days War. Old Franje had tried desperately to shield paranormals and scions, granting them sanctuary and parrying both the diplomatic and the military maneuvers of the evangelicals of Gilead, who demanded the return of any escaped North American citizens for internment in the death camps. Hegemony Albion and Old Franje had both been horrifically bombed during the war. The first and last nuclear strike, resulting in the Vegas Waste, had been in North America, but in Hegemony Europa, people had long memories. Notre Dame had taken a direct hit, and sometimes, it was said, you could hear the screams of the dying. I didn't doubt it. An old temple built at the juncture of five ley lines feeding energy into the city's gravitational center was a prime place for ghost flits. She really deserved her own collegia of ceremonials to drain her charge and restore her. But down here in the dark, it wasn't a good idea. Scions tend to go a little nuts underground. At the top of the steps, the great doors hung, creaking slightly on their ancient hinges as currents of power threaded through the physical structure of the building. The Lady was restless tonight, maybe reading my intentions, or perhaps just restless because the presence of demons made the entire city shiver like a hooker watching a knife in a pimp's hand.
Like a knife made out of wood, Danny? The knife in your bag? Not going to do you much good in there.
I pushed the doors open, scanning the interior of the temple through a haze of power. To other sight, white-hot snakes crawled and writhed over the floor, crackling up the columns and walls, dripping from the ruined choir loft and the magnificent chipped stonework and fading frescoes.
This is even better than I'd hoped.
It was the magical equivalent of a fallout zone. It would keep me hidden in the first stage of the work I intended to perform. And when I drained the ambient power to fuel the spell, it would make a huge, stinking noise. A noise noticed by every scion and probably every demon in a good 300-mile radius.
It just doesn't get any better than this.
All around us, pale transparencies of ghost flits rode the currents of power. Some of them silently screaming, others just drifting, wearing out their chains until they found, by accident, the way into the clear, rational light of what comes next. The flits were a good sign. Gathering here where there was enough power to bathe them in something approximating borrowed flesh, even though my skin chilled to see them, cold breath on my back and wariness rising to my nape. Necromancers don't like flits much. They congregate in nightclubs, some old, uncared-for temples, anywhere there's enough power, instability, and heat to give them a simulacrum of life. Back in the days before the Awakening, those gifted with the ability to see the dead were often pursued by flits and battered into insane asylums and suicide by the harassment. It technically isn't harassment, since flits are just confused and can't understand why normals can't see them, but it's still pretty damn uncomfortable. And before the Awakening, the training to keep mental and emotional borders clear and firm to ward off the confused dead wasn't available in any systematic way. I had to breathe through my mouth, trying not to smell the ripe, fresh odor. I pushed the door closed, scanning the entire place. Not a soul except the rats in the walls and the flits, a few of them taking notice of the glittering sparkle in my aura that meant necromance.
Do you know what you're doing, Danny?
I ignored the voice of reason and made a slow circuit of the whole place. I checked the door in the east quadrant, behind a screening pile of rubble and garbage that smelled unwholesome in the extreme. It opened up into a narrow alley excavated between Notre Dame and the sloping tenement next door. At the end of that alley, at the bottom of a well that went up to the third level, That is, three discrete levels down from the surface, if the dark side could be said to have actual official levels. The slim shape of an air bike was a thin metal gleam. It hadn't been touched. The thread-thin warding I'd laid on it, undisturbed. I turned to McKinley.
All right. It's still there. Now are you happy? I wish we'd been able to find Van and Lucas.
Not to mention Leander. I hope he's still alive, federal agent or not.
They can take care of themselves. You're who I'm worried about.
Maybe you should be. I'm about to do something insane.
You might want to take notes. You're going to see a greater work of magic performed tonight.
And if it doesn't work, maybe we'll both die in here.
Are you really going to do this?
He took up his position by the door, his hands shaken out and loose. The violet glow around his left hand brightened, maybe in response to the ambient power. I wondered just what exactly that metallic coating on his flesh meant.
Nah, I don't want to know.
I said I would. Eve's right. This will buy us some time and create enough confusion to keep us in the game a bit longer. Not only that, but Jaframil needs some cover. If it doesn't work, at the very least, it'll make a lot of noise and distract a bunch of demons.
Or the prince will find you.
Thanks, McKinley. You know, I might have forgotten about that if you hadn't reminded me.
Which is why Eve can't do this. If Lucifer or one of his stooges grabs her...
And I'm about to let that happen.
If he shows up, we both may die. I'm supposed to look after you.
I know, but we're both out of our depth here. It's only a matter of time before someone other than Eve finds me.
I'm gonna help Jaff and Eve at the same time, McKinley. You wanna try to stop me? All you'll get is a belly full of steel. You wanna test me on this?
His pause was gratifying, at least.
Jaff can take care of himself! And she...
This isn't under discussion, Sunshine. You wanna leave? There's the door.
I turned away. There was a clear space in front of the altar, and I flipped open my bag as I strode away, around the mound of rubbish that would give us some cover if we had to retreat firing. My fingers rooted through the chaos. Spare ammo, leather-wrapped wood, a plas-glass container of cornmeal still miraculously unhurt, and a small jar of salt. What I really needed was the chunk of consecrated chalk. I stepped back out into the soaring space of the ruined temple and surveyed the mounds of garbage.
It isn't the location that matters, Danny. Magic is a state of mind. Get moving. Fuck.
I said that in lieu of a prayer. My fingers closed on the chalk. The Sorcerer's Circle is an invention of 17th century magic, but it's still a useful innovation. A scion has to be ready to deal with nasty things outside the charmed border of a circle. But as a container for magical force, the circle is without equal. I didn't precisely hurry, but I didn't take my time either. I bought a bottle of Crosstein rum at a tiny dark side shop run by an anemic-looking normal woman, and the pack of Synthash cigarettes sat with it at the north point of the circle. I made it double, runes from the nine cannons sketched between the outer and inner rings. I should have had incense and divination to pick the proper time, and a ritual robe. I should have had a consecrated cup, expensive wine instead of cheap liquor, and a week or so to pattern and prepare myself. I should have meditated for an hour or so to clear my head.
Yeah, well...
I finished the circle and stood inside it. I'd fastened my sword to the back carry, hilt standing up over my shoulder. I'd need both hands for this, and possibly for piloting the airbike in a hurry if this worked the way I wanted it to. I settled my bag against my side. Cinnamon musk rose to combat the odor of garbage and the sour, sharp smell of stagnant power.
Danny, what are you doing?
I pushed the voice of reason away one more time. I was trying to stay alive, same as usual. The game was rigged, sure. But I was going to make it a little more difficult to rig, hopefully. I stood in the middle of the circle, checking its confines.
Salt, rum, cigarettes, all present and accounted for. If I pull this off, it's gonna be one of the finest greater works I've ever seen performed. And I'm not even a magi.
Most magi would kill to have a demon tell them even half of what Eve had told me. Kagumbi had handed over his shadow journal. something Magi never did. With the steps to break open the walls of the world clearly delineated.
What kind of hold does she have over him? Or is he one of Jaff's people playing along with her for an unspecified reason? Games within games, plot and counterplot, and me with the benefit of a successful Magi's magical diagrams and explanations. Lucky me.
You're stalling.
I sank to my knees facing the north, shut my eyes and tried to breathe calmly. But rage bubbled and boiled under my breastbone. It was never far from the surface these days, and it was good fuel. I uncapped the rum. I took a swallow and let it burn the velvet cavern of my mouth. I tore the package open and arranged the synth hash cigarettes in a wheel, all pointing outward. I tossed the salt straight up, letting it sift down, kissing my hair and face. I let power bleed out, fueled by my rage. It slid free, filling the chalk marks and turning them silvery. Power soaked into the runes marked between the rings, each one named as I drew it, a sudden subsonic note beginning to thrum. I chanted silently, my lips moving, burning with rum.
Jace, is he watching me? Are all my dead watching? Well, enjoy the show, everyone. I'm about to make my mark.
McKinley shifted nervously behind me, his aura drawing in, a point of tension in the sea of power. Notre Dame shivered, like a sleeper rolling over in bed, struggling toward waking.
If this doesn't work right, a whole hell of a lot of people in Paradise are going to have a very bad day.
For a moment, my conscience pricked at me.
What am I doing? But needs must when the devil drives, and the devil is driving this engine. Besides, the damage will be contained, I hope. But I'm playing roulette with other people's lives. If Lucifer catches Japhomel or Eve, how many other people will suffer? All of Jaff's agents, however many he has salted away. All of Eve's rebellion. Demons, sure, but still. Is the enemy of my enemy worth what I'm about to do? God damn it, if Lucifer keeps playing these games, more people are going to suffer. Here's my chance to end it.
My right hand caressed the knife hilt. The last rune shimmered. Oruthuz, the piercer of veils, with its two downward spiking teeth. I let the power slip through my mental fingers, filling the rune like a cup. The circle clicked into completeness. Moving air pushed my tangled hair back. The ghost flits rode closer, drawn to the circle's humming tautness. None of them approached me yet, but they shimmered, taking on false substance. Eyes glittered, hands of tinted smoke reaching out and curling away, their mouths opening. If I listened, I could hear them.
Not tonight, kids.
Heat bloomed in the center of the circle, in a space behind the physical. It was a good sign. The walls of reality thinning here under an onslaught of centuries of power. The point of heat became a flame, wavered and held. The cigarettes trembled like spokes of a wheel about to roll into motion. All it needed was a little push.
Valentine!
Too late.
I centered myself, the pattern of what I was about to attempt rising through the surface of the world. Then I jacked into Notre Dame's ambient power and sent everything I could reach pouring into that small, non-physical flame. The cigarettes lit, fuming synth-hash smoke rising in angular shapes. The runes froze, sparking with blue and crimson light. Then settled into a golden glow and began writhing against the floor, running between the two circles in a smeared streak. The temperature rose. My voice was suddenly audible. This wasn't a necromancer's power chant to bring a soul over the bridge and allow it a voice in the world of the living. This was something else. It roiled in the air and tore into the circle. The words taking waste and form, streaming into a vortex of absence, blooming like a camera lens away from the flame, now visible as a pale, colorless twisting. I had no idea where the words came from, but I went with it. Once you start a greater work like this, the magic takes its own shape. It rides you, for good or for ill, and you are a passenger on its tidal wave. If the work miscarries, you can get backlash sickness, or drained down dangerously far as it tries to complete itself even through its flaws. Which is why preparation, planning, divination, and good old-fashioned luck are key to surviving your own greater works. Ghost blades began to peel away, their smoky forms shredding. I was actually draining Notre Dame, the flood tide of energy directed at weakening the walls of the world, already tissue thin but made of strong, resilient stuff. The knife vibrated in my bag. Harmonic resonance ached in my teeth and bones. Fudoshin answered with its own scabbarded hum. The runes in the circle were now moving so fast they were a golden ring. A hoop of fire, a thin thread of crimson running through the warp and weft of the spell, drawing it tight, tighter, tightest.
Valentine!
I was too far gone in the spell. There was more and more power forcing itself through my shredded shielding, tender scarred patches in my psyche smoking under the strain. I was a glove too small for the hand forcing its way in. The magic uncaring of my human limits. The fabric of my mind bending and ripping under the strain, just as the cloth of reality tore, a vertical slit opening. The second half of the spell locks down. Anchors driven deep into the temple's floor, stone walls shifting and the entire city ramming through my unprotected skull for one endless, horrific moment. The anchors held, reality warping and skewing at the edges of the hole I'd just torn in the world. Through that long tunnel, a weird, directionless red-orange glow bloomed. The door was open.
I'm not even a magi! Any magi worth their salt would pay to have me do this. I've done what it takes them years to do. Damn, I'm good.
I fell backward as they boiled through. McKinley grabbed me. The rushing tide of darkness took on lambent eyes and horns, feathers and long arms. The denizens of hell grabbed their opportunity and escaped. Chaos smashed against the temple's walls, and Notre Dame woke in a blinding sheet of power and thundered against the violation. McKinley dragged me. Psychic darkness washed against the temple's walls, coated its refuse-strewn floor, and no few of the demons paused in their headlong rush to eye me.
God damn it!
The Hellespont agent pulled me behind a pile of garbage, cutting off my view of the circle and escaping lesser flight demons.
What the hell is wrong with you?
The snap of connection breaking between me and the circle was blessed relief, my mind contracting behind the borrowed weight of Jaffermil's shielding.
Oh! Yet another time my brain should have turned to oatmeal. Lucky, lucky me.
The door will stay open as long as the top lines feeding it power can handle the strain before slamming shut. The fabric of reality reasserting its structure. Demons will flood through till then, and since Lucifer's big thing is controlling which demon goes where, he'll have his hands full!
I just altered the playing field, and hopefully created enough chaos to cover McKinley and me for a little bit, until Jaff could get back. He would also, hopefully, find it a little easier to sneak around hell now that I'd thrown the dice again. I'd given Eve the time she asked for.
For my first toss of the dice in this game, this is a doozy.
I'd also just unleashed who knew how many demons on the world.
Gods forgive me.
The hegemony would also have its hands full dealing with this eruption, and that meant they wouldn't be sending any more field agents after me.
Welcome to the game, Danny.
The temple's side door yawned. McKinley hauled me through, greasy crud scraping against our boots. We made it to the airbike. McKinley thumbed the starter. Anti-grav whined. I threw my leg over the bike's saddle. I looked back to see imps boiling over the trash heap, their bald heads gleaming and their naked limbs moving in ways nothing of this world should move. McKinley bent over the handlebars and kicked the mage lock off. He grabbed at his waist, the anti-grav woke, and we rocketed away even as the imps ignored us and scattered like quicksilver. Notre Dame surged behind us, psychic stress becoming physical. I clutched at both McKinley and consciousness, hanging on to each by the thinnest of threads. My cheek ached, the tattoo shifting madly under the skin. We raced for the surface of Paradise on the expanding edge of a circle of chaos I had just unleashed on an unsuspecting world. The rooms were beautiful. Arches pierced with shafts of golden light that wasn't daylight, but well-placed full-spectrum bulbs. It was a nice touch, even if the air swirled and trembled with the tang of spice and musk that said, "Demon." Priceless antiques, mostly vases, sat on fluted plas-glass tables, each one humming with subsonic magical force. Demon warding was anchored to the walls, but straining bits of demon magic were also set in each knick-knack and curio, sending up waves of interference into the atmosphere. Someone was taking a great deal of trouble to make this place invisible. Protections woven over every inch of wall space, trip lines and protective wards showered over the flooring and furniture. It was uncomfortably close to the way things looked in hell. I kept expecting to glance in a corner and see my fallen. Or a pair of green eyes and a shock of golden hair, burning like an aureole. I sat in Eve's hideout, McKinley by the door to the suite she'd shown us to. This tower rose among hundreds of others, a forest of glowing spires watching as dawn rose over the world. Up here on the bright side of the city, it wasn't too bad. But the ambient power tasted like burning cinnamon. The Hollow News was full of weird occurrences. A street on one of the Dark Side's lowest levels turned to a sheet of glass. A wave of fights breaking out in taverns. A paranormal incident at Notre Dame calling hegemony containment teams from around the globe. People were uneasy. Even the normals feel it when the ambient power of a city is drained or altered. I was hungry. McKinley leaned his head back against the wall.
Are you okay?
He kept asking me that, about once an hour. Normally it would have dragged irritation against my bare nerves, my shoulders still prickle numb, my eyes sandy and aching. But right now, I was glad of the company.
Peachy.
Tell me again why we're trusting her. Jeff won't like this.
He said himself that she has a reason to keep me alive and him happy. We need more backup, McKinley. This is safer than being on our own. In any case, it's too late now.
It's not like Van. He's never been late before.
And he has Lucas with him.
I'm not happy about it either. I bought us some breathing room, at least.
I need food. What I wouldn't give to be able to walk down the street to a noodle shop, or even grab a heat-sealed packet of protein mush.
Yeah, I guess so.
The electric light ran over his hair, glittered in his black eyes. The windows were polarized. We would be invisible from outside, if anything but empty air was this high up, sandwiched between hover lanes. Nobody would think to look for me in a tower in the poshest slice of Paradise. I found myself rubbing at my left shoulder, pushing cloth over the twisted, numb scar.
How long is this gonna take, Jeff? I've about run out of delaying tactics.
What do you think is gonna happen?
Jaff will come back. He always does, sooner or later.
There's my opening.
How long have you been working for him?
Long enough to trust him.
He shifted his weight, peeled himself away from the wall.
You don't have to like me, Valentine. I'm just doing my job.
Segment, Sias.
I was just asking.
I pushed myself up to my booted feet. My hair felt filthy, tangled with dust and dirt, reeking of Notre Dame, spent magic and demons.
At least my clothes weren't blown off me this time.
He never tells me anything.
He's not known for explaining himself.
Could you sound any more dismissive?
What is he known for? Or is that classified information, too?
He's a demon. He's the prince's eldest, and an assassin.
The city glowed, fingers of gold reaching through the streets as the sun lifted itself up over the rim of the world. The Senna glittered in the distance, a river of molten stuff coming up from underground amid the sprawl of the suburbs, and I could just see the column of light that was the Place Glow beam atop the Tour Eiffel, fading as the sky flushed with rose instead of gray. I could feel the plucked string of the Tour vibrating as it channeled the city's distress.
Fine, I get it.
What can I tell you that you don't already know? Jesus Christus, he's risked everything for you.
I didn't ask McKinley what he thought I'd risked for Jaff. It would take a few days for Paradise to get back to itself, its population feeding back into the ambient well of power. The scions around here were probably having headaches and nausea, their bodies getting accustomed to a lower level in the energy flux.
Congratulations, Danny. Making friends everywhere you go, aren't you?
My psychic fingerprints were all over the work at Notre Dame. That was the trouble with the use of power. It was so highly personal. I was going to be very famous once everyone figured out what had happened.
If, of course, word gets out.
The hegemony had a reason to keep this under wraps. If they were Lucifer's toy.
Plot and counterplot. Nobody's what they seem. Not even Jaff Rommel. Not even me. Playing the devil's game now.
You know, I'm getting a little tired of everyone assuming I made Jaff fall.
What exactly did you do?
I was just trying to stay alive. All of a sudden, the devil wanted me to kill someone, and I had a reason to do it. Then things just got out of hand, and before I knew it, I had a demon all over me and a serious case of gene splicing. Then he up and dies on me, and...
I rested my forehead on the cold, reinforced plas glass. It was thick enough to be projectile-proof.
Why am I trying to explain myself to him, of all people?
It wasn't my fault.
There's enough that is my fault.
Forget it. I was just trying to find a few things out.
Why don't you ask him?
He won't answer me. Or he lies. Look, McKinley, I'm sorry I fucking well asked you. Just shut up.
Mercifully, he did.
I don't like this. Don't like it at all.
McKinley held his peace. I swung away from the window and cast a sharp glance over the room. Bed fit for a princess, choked in blue velvet. Fainting couches in the same blue velvet. Lyrate tables holding knick-knacks humming with sleepy demon magic. The pale cream carpet was thick enough to lose credit discs in. Electric light grew paler, compensating for day rising in the east. Fine hairs on my nape rose. Premonition ruffled past me, icy fingernails touching my cheeks. Whatever was going to happen was coming soon, rolling toward me like ball bearings on a reactive greased slope.
Keep moving, Danny. If you stop, you'll drown.
That was rabbit talk. Right now I was safest with my head down, staying in a protected location. The more I moved around, the more people would see me, the more chance someone would get word of where I was. I had just acted on my own, for once since this whole thing started, not just being pushed from place to place. I was pretty sure nobody would have expected this from me. The thing to do now was wait for the counter move, just like in battle chess. My stomach twisted unhappily.
You hungry?
McKinley had picked another wall to lean against, where he could see both me and the door. He glanced up, the bruised circles under his eyes harshly evident in the new light.
I could eat.
There's bound to be a kitchen in this pile. We'll find something.
If I can't move around out in the city, I'll settle for poking around here. If I have to stay in one room for very long, I'm gonna go insane.
We didn't have to go very far. At the end of the short, curving hall outside the suite's door, there was the hoverlift we'd come up in, and a small kitchen. It was stocked with the usual Paradise hotelier fare. Cheese, bread, fruit, coffee, a wide array of gourmet freeze reheat stuff like individual pizzas and packets of beef pho with noodles.
Is this just Eve planning for me, or did it come with the tower? Who's paying for all this?
Then again, demons have no problem with money. McKinley settled down with a hunk of yellow cheese and a baguette, taking bites off an apple in between. I popped one of the individual pizzas into the microwave and hit the button. Everything was new, top of the line, and unused.
This is weird. Then again, Sunshine, weird is your middle name these days.
Why would she have human food?
They like it. It's not nourishment to them, it's an accessory.
McKinley opened a bottle of mineral water with a practiced twist of his wrist.
Plus, any demon is going to have human retainers. It's how it works. They like to stay behind the scenes unless there's killing to be done.
Just a fount of useful information, aren't you? When you're not sneering at me, that is.
Oh. I watched through the plas glass door as the pizza heated. Cheese melting and bubbling. The smell of marinara and cheese, not to mention crust, suddenly filling my mouth with water.
Retainers. This is so very feudal.
I guess so. Like the mob, only not so nice.
His eyes never stopped roving the room, and he'd picked the seat between me and the door.
Exactly where I'd sit if I was doing bodyguard duty on someone.
My nape prickled again. I retrieved my little pizza. I settled myself in the safest spot, my back to the blind corner holding a mini-fridge and the disposal unit. McKinley shifted a little in his seat, his metallic left hand lying discarded on the blonde wood tabletop.
How'd you end up working for Jeff?
I didn't think he'd tell me, but it was a way to pass the time. I waited for the pizza to cool down, eyeing the gobbets of melted cheese. It smelled like real cheese, too. And I was suddenly reminded of the first meal I'd ever eaten with my fallen.
My, how the world turns.
I was almost dead, but I put up a hell of a fight. He was impressed and offered me either a quick passing or service. I wasn't ready to die yet.
I peeled a pre-cut slice out of the golden wheel.
You know, you could give a demon lessons in not really answering the goddamn question.
My former lord wanted to kill the eldest. We tried like hell, but we were only human, even with modifications.
I held the pizza, my mouth hanging open for what seemed an eternity.
We meaning you and Van?
Oh, and a few others.
His face changed, and he laid down the hunk of cheese.
They should be looking for you, too. That's another reason why I'm worried.
Looking for me?
Just like guardian angels, Valentine. We had a perimeter set up in Toscano, keeping you under wraps.
I never knew.
That was the idea.
The scar in the hollow of my left shoulder twinged, warningly.
You okay?
My shoulder twinged again, like a fishhook in flesh, plucking as it twitched.
Fine.
I need fuel, no matter what happens next.
You know, I don't think I should stay up here like a princess in a pea. Or whatever the hell that is. I think we should wander around this place and peek at what the demons are doing.
Why not just get the hell out of here?
Because without Jeff or Mel, you and I are both dead out there. This isn't just a paper cut to Lucifer. I threw down a challenge big time. I'm sure the hegemony would love to get their hands on me, too. I'm too hot to handle now. But I don't trust demons either, even if they have good reasons to protect me. I'm getting to where I don't trust anyone, not even myself. So I want to look around where I've landed.
Besides, I can't take being cooped up in this tower.
I felt horribly naked, even with all the demon shielding on the walls. I also felt filthy, messy, ugly, and the slightest bit shaky. I itched for some kind of action sparring, or a hard, clean fight. Something to get rid of the bright red ribbon of rage under the surface of my thoughts, growing in increments, pressing against the confines of my temper. A shadow fell over the kitchen door, and I knew who it was even before she appeared. I smelled her. a smell that was quickly growing unique, impressing itself on my sensitive nose. McKinley's chair scraped as he bolted to his feet, the color draining from his cheeks and turning him way pale as the scorch of a demon filled the air. I finished the last two bites of crust, and Eve folded her arms, smiling that imperturbable smile. Her clotted ice hair touched her shoulders, almost writhing with life, and her gas flame eyes passed over me in a long arc.
I see you found your provisions. I thought it best not to ask you to dinner with our other guests.
Charmed. I could probably eat my way through here in an hour or so. But I was thinking of looking around, seeing what your setup is here.
A slim shoulder lifted, dropped.
If there is time.
What's going on? Where's Kagumbi?
The scar twined again and began to tingle. Not the numb prickle of Jaframel elsewhere, but a waking up feeling.
I hope this is what I think it is.
The Magi has disappeared. Wise of him, I think. We've planned a council of war, and I thought to request your presence. Several of my allies have found themselves recently freed from hell.
Fancy that. War, huh? When?
Tonight, at dusk. It's traditional. May I count on your presence?
You can.
Very well.
She turned on her heel sharply, without even deigning to look in McKinley's direction.
Eve?
If that's even your name.
Her narrow back was to me.
You can put that face back on, if you want. The one that looks like Doreen.
Why? This is what I am, Dante.
I might find it a little easier to look at you. Then again, maybe not.
You were human. At least partly.
Not just human. She'd been a little girl. A child I had been unable to save.
Nothing of humanity survives Hell's fires.
I let her kiss my cheek once. I got so close to her, I could smell her, feel her heat. Was it just that she looked like Doreen? Is there any truth to her claim that I was part of the genetic mix used to make her? How else had she found me?
What about what you got from me? Doesn't that count?
It matters as little or as much as you want to make it matter. You're still the only mother I have.
McKinley's restless. Maybe he wants to argue.
I can't hold a gun to your head and make you human. I can't even do that to myself.
If you could, would you?
She still didn't turn around.
No, I wouldn't.
Why?
Because that's not the way I play, goddammit.
Just because. It wouldn't change anything.
She turned back, slowly, letting the light play over each feature. Each hill and valley, geometrically just a little off, altered.
I cannot afford to be too human. Not with him to slay, and all of us to save. And your lover, ally or not, to reckon with. But as human as I can be, I will be in your honor, my mother.
The scar began to burn, faintly at first, heat working through its numbness, a candle flame moving closer and closer to the flesh, a spot of warmth. I found my right hand hovering over my dirty shoulder, fingertips aching for the feel of the ropey scar twisting and bumping under my touch.
Valentine!
Shut up! Just eat. I'm going to get cleaned up.
Dying sunlight turned bloody in the west, and the room was long and wide, windowless, and full of movement that stopped the moment I stepped over the threshold. Plain white walls vibrated with demon warding, and the long, slim, highly polished table running down the center was full of demons. I froze. At the head of the table, Eve straightened, pushing back her pale ropes of hair, the room full of demons, their lambent eyes on me. Tall or short, most slender and golden-skinned, but each with that aura of difference demons carry. They are not beautiful or ugly, though some of them are bizarre in the extreme. It's that breath of alienness that makes the human mind shiver when looking at them. They were all of the greater flight, There was no mistaking it. To my left, dozing in a corner, two hellhounds slumped together, sleeping, their obsidian limbs splayed in a caricature of relaxation. From under one eyelid, a sliver of orange peeked.
Okay, not sleeping then.
A prickling shiver ran through my entire body, and I was suddenly very sure that I wanted to see Jaframel again.
Right fucking now.
Gentlemen, I present to you Dante Valentine, the eldest Hedera, and the key to the throne of Hell.
Should I take a bow?
What nonsense are you speaking? This is the eldest Tor and our hostage.
One demon at my end of the table, a tall, sharp-faced male with a shock of black thistledown hair, tensed as if to rise to his feet. He wore white, rags fluttering as his fingers curled around the edge of the table, and my awareness centered on him, my hand itching for the sword hilt again.
Zarge! Our plan requires the key. Without the key, we could not retrieve the knife. Without the knife, there is no challenge we can make to Lucifer that will not end in our death or capture. With Dante's help, we can rob Lucifer of the greatest support of his regime, the eldest's loyalty. And with the knife, there is hope for us to topple Lucifer, or simply reach a treaty with him that he dares not break.
You are a fool! No demon can wield the knife!
His bright blue burning eyes fixed on me. My skin chilled, my throat going dry, and I was vaguely aware of McKinley moving closer to me, his peculiar, null aura contracting.
She is not a demon! What does the riddle say? So spoke Ilvara Mel's Hedera in the temple of the White-Walled City before she died at the hands of the Kinslayer.
Well, that's just bad poetry. And why didn't anyone ever tell me about this before?
Eve turned away from the table, passing the high-backed chair, pacing to the wall and staring at its smooth white gleam. The warding sunk into the walls trembled under her attention, my knees echoing that tremor.
Who fits this description, Zaj? Who has escaped fire, walked in death and been given strength beyond a mortal's ken by the first fallen in millennia? If you have another candidate who fits the bill, feel free to produce them for our study and illumination.
Zaj dropped back into his chair, still staring at me.
I do not like the look on his face.
You think she can wield the knife?
This demon, halfway down the table, was dressed all in fluttering red. Long sleeves and a minstrel's dreamy face marred by the thin crimson lines of what looked like tribal tattoos swirling across his cheeks. His eyes were scarlet drops with black teardrops painted over them. I stared at the sharpness of his white teeth against golden skin and scarlet markings. He looked oddly familiar.
I am not thinking clearly. I am not even close to thinking clearly.
Increasing heat mounted through the lines of the scar on my left shoulder. I touched the knife in its hilt strapped to my rig, and the demons froze. Each pair of eyes fixed on me.
Maybe taking it out of my bag wasn't such a great idea after all. On the other hand, if any of them comes at me...
I applaud our leader for her show of strength. What precisely are we discussing?
This, from a demon with a veil of gold tissue over its head and the shadow of something under it I had no desire to see.
Rebellion and the death of the Prince of Hell. That is what we are speaking of, is it not?
With a whole bunch of you guys for backup, it might even be possible.
Sounds great. I'm all for it. When do we start?
You see, Hedera does not fear him. Why should we of the greater flight fear him when we have the means to make the eldest behave? Or at least remain neutral? If we are allied with the holder of the Knife of Sorrow, we have the upper hand.
None have ever successfully challenged the prince.
A demon with fat yellow tentacled dreadlocks. He had 8 fingers on his right hand.
Still, we have come this far. It is logical for us to pursue our course. After all, he will not forgive us. Are we resigned to death?
He will suspect our intentions and send someone to collect the knife.
This was a tall, thin demon whose face was hidden under the hood of a gray cloak, the material shifting oddly as it twitched. Eve's eyes met mine.
He did. But we had our own viper in the heart of that mission. Any other demon he sends will meet a harsh fate.
Our own viper? This little thing.
I could not look away from Eve's face. My heart thudded thinly, and I was suddenly aware of sweat prickling under my arms and at the small of my back. It took a lot of effort to make me sweat. A half hour of hard sparring, at least. Or a room full of demons. Go figure.
She has been far more successful than any of you, has she not? And as long as we hold the allegiance of this necromance, we hold the allegiance of her fallen. If you do not respect her might, I should hope you are not stupid enough to disregard his. We do have your allegiance, do we not, Dante?
Every eye in the place on me. McKinley shuffled slightly near the door. I wondered if the coppery smell of fear riding the air was from him or from me.
It's me. It's coming from that black place in me, the thing I don't want to remember.
The rush and crackle of flame filled my veins. A lioness's head lifting behind my eyes, her face full of bloody light. The world turned over, ramming me back into myself with a concussive internal blast. I almost staggered, caught myself. Air scorched my lungs as I let out the breath I'd been holding, returning to my skin with a rush of certainty.
You told me you wanted me to set myself up against the Prince of Hell. Here I am. That son of a bitch has messed with me for the last time.
And you're fallen?
A slight, cruel smile lifted the corners of Eve's mouth, and my face felt so numb I couldn't tell if I was copying the expression or if she'd stolen it from my face.
He's with me.
You are certain?
Don't ask me that. I'm pretty certain, but he's pulled fast ones on me before.
I searched her face, finding only the taint of demon overlaying her skin with a high gloss, covered with the dark hood of my own guilt at not being able to save her from Lucifer in the first place. There were so many I had failed to save. Louis, Doreen, Jace, Eddie, Gabe. The list stretched on. My arms and legs were frozen, my face a stiff mask. All that remained was to say the words.
I'm sure. What do you have in mind?
She opened her mouth, but my scar turned molten, sending a soft wave of power down my skin. The sun turned into a bloody eye low in the sky. Paradise glimmered. Slim plasteel towers, each vetted by an aesthetic committee before the first hoverload of dirt was lifted. They pierced the gathering twilight, shimmers resolving near their tops, lights blurring along each graceful arch. Eve lowered herself into the iron chair at the head of the table, its high spiked back spearing the air. The demons waited. Crimson painted the windows, and if I hadn't been so nervous and just plain exhausted, I might have enjoyed the once-in-a-lifetime view of Paradise stretching out beneath us. The buildings beginning their nightly dance of illumination. Streams of hover traffic winking with reactive paint. The towers also beginning to let loose scarves of synth perfume that glittered crystalline as the lowering sun shone through them. Walking in Paradise is an olfactory experience as well as visual.
I should be out there having the time of my life.
Darkness gathered along the floor, and I felt the quivering that ran through the building. It felt like a padded hammer tapping at my left shoulder.
It begins. Sema?
A demon at the far end of the table, the one with a long shock of blue hair woven with glittering gold charms, rose and padded to the hoverlift door. The lift machinery began, the whine of hover transport and a swoosh of displaced air. I didn't look, staring down the table and off to the left, where the windows framed a cityscape just falling under night's cloak.
Steady now, Dante.
I edged along the table, passing behind demons so still they might have been statues, and finally paused, almost to Eve's chair. To get there, I had to pass the mottled demon, and I didn't want to. The mood of the room turned dark, power spilling against my nerve strings like warm oil, a sizzling bath. The lift arrived. He came into the room.
Dear gods, thank you. He's out of hell.
The scar on my shoulder turned live, singing against my skin. A burst of power working its way down through flesh and racing through my bones. I saw shock and growing apprehension. He tipped a room full of scary-ass demons into fear just by walking in.
Jaffermill, my fallen, my very own demon. I am so happy to see you right now, Jaff.
I let my eyes swing over to him. He'd come alone and stood in front of the hoverlift doors, his eyes burning green under winged dark eyebrows. His hair was longer, too. He hadn't cut it. It fell in his eyes and shadowed the first shock. The gauntness of his face. He looked starved. Perfect skin drawn tight over bones that revealed demon architecture as surely as my own. There were hollows under his cheekbones, and dark smudges under his eyes. Just as piercing and laser-like as Lucifer's, but just a shade less inherently awful. It was still too close for comfort. Little whispering fingers chuckled nasty things inside my head, taunting me. The second shock was the threads of paleness in Jaff's hair. Silvery gray strands in the rough, dark silk. I took all this in with a glance. Met his eyes again. A burning prickle started in the scar, like a limb waking up. Like my entire body, a swift pulse slamming through me and shouting his name even as remembered screams boiled up as the devil chuckled and whispered in my ear. There was a lump in my throat. It was my heart.
Welcome, Kinslayer.
The scar turned hot on my shoulder, molten liquid spreading out from it in intricate pathways. Jaframel's eyes didn't leave mine.
You are well, Dante?
He was furious. His rage circled the room lazily, gathering itself, and the bottom of my stomach dropped out. I had never seen this in him before. I'd seen him calm, and I'd seen him lethal. I had seen him languid, and I'd seen him tense with danger. But I had never seen him look so much like he was going to start killing, and he wasn't particularly picky about who he began with. The other demons shifted uneasily in their chairs, darting bright, nervous glances at Eve, who looked completely unaffected. She tilted her head slightly, as if giving me permission to respond. I lied, my mouth moving independently of my brain again.
Never better.
I stifled the words that wanted to come out.
You look like hell. And why do I get the feeling you're not happy to see me?
Jaframel studied me for a long few moments, immovable, a sort of darkness against the glow of Paradise leaking through the Placilica behind him. The sun died, sinking below the Earth's rim, and the city suddenly blazed.
Make your offer.
His eyes didn't leave mine, and his hands tensed slightly at his sides. Furoshin hummed inside his sheath, a single low tone of dissatisfaction. The knife's hum slid up another notch.
Ois nefer ober at Lucas on gegen Warp. Roren you must umset seats mutzer. Sitches utzeme matrizi. Sitches force utanumarzi.
As Eve spoke, the mood of the room was beginning to tip again. It felt like a riot was going to break out, or a thunderstorm. It also felt like I was standing right in its path.
There's no easy way out of this one.
Little invisible tremors twitched through my muscles.
Find time to start coming down with the shakes, Danny. Focus!
Sutro iriro roiro ni anul snekon atsi chili.
Jaframel pointedly kept his eyes locked with mine.
Ogilid ni odak rosof rorepo erok.
Let's ask her, shall we?
Who do you prefer, Dante? Him or me?
Prefer? Both of you are pretty goddamn scary right now.
I peeled myself away from the chair, my legs suddenly weak and shaking. Some kind of letdown from all the adrenaline I'd been soaking in, at the worst possible time, as Jaff's mark on my shoulder pulsed, burning away the veil of numbness. I took two steps back from the table. The demon Zaj tensed, and so did McKinley. Twin movements I could feel like a storm front against a sensitive membrane.
Jaff, we're all on the same side here, and Eve...
I did not come here for her. The prince has pronounced doom on every Ifrigen in this room.
His eyes still didn't flicker away from mine.
You are all under sentence of death for treason to the throne of hell. I am here to execute that sentence.
Sounds like a done deal.
Then the reality of what he just said hit me square in the chest.
Hey, wait a second. When did this happen?
Betrayal, sharp and pointed, hit me just afterward.
Sure, Danny. Let me go into hell and get the knife. You idiot. He probably went to have another little tete-a-tete with Lucifer and you let him. You fell for it.
It was the last straw. The last betrayal. A small, quiet part of me asked why I was jumping to conclusions, but the rest of me shouted that little voice of doubt down.
How many times can Jaff pull a Mickey on you before you get the idea?
I was justified in thinking he'd turn on me. How could I not be? Sentence of death. That meant he wanted to kill Eve.
Not while I'm breathing, bucko.
Jaff or Mel?
My right hand closed around Fudoshin's hilt. The blade left the scabbard, and I settled into second guard, a movement so habitual and natural it seemed easier than standing upright and feeling the shaking work its way into my bones. Light ran like oil over honed steel, blue flame waking along its sharp, sweet curve.
Jaff or Mel? You can start with me.
Are you kidding, Dante? You know how fast he is. You don't have a chance.
It didn't matter. Nothing mattered now. And if nothing mattered, everything was permissible. Everything was possible. So it was glancingly possible that I might hit him if he came at Eve.
Segments, I asked Danny. You at least could have drawn a gun.
You see, Kinslayer. Come for me, and she will do what she must. If I am a traitor, so is she. Will you kill your own Lehman?
That brought his eyes to her for the first time.
Hey, I feel faintly ridiculous here, standing dressed in air-dried wrinkles with drawn steel and nobody paying any goddamn attention to me.
It matters little. Neither you, nor death, nor even the prince may have her. And I have time to teach her manners, which is none of your concern. Yield and return to your nest, Androgyne. And you may yet be forgiven.
Come and take me if you dare.
The trembling air was riven again, demon powers spiking and tearing.
The hellhounds. Oh gods, this is rapidly getting out of hand, if it's ever been manageable in the first place.
The growling was coming from right behind me.
Oh, shite. Game.
Zaj rose slowly. He was far too close to me.
Game and set.
Jaff or Mel actually smiled. It was one of those slow, murderous grins I'd seen him use during the hunt for Santino. Only it was dialed up to 10 instead of 2 on the scary scale. The urge to dive for cover collided with the need to back up, both fighting with the sudden desire to turn around and see what was behind me.
Right behind me, breathing heat into my goddamn hair.
The scar suddenly blazing with spiked iron wire, driving into my flesh, burrowing in. Jaffamel's right hand came out from behind his back. Gold glittered in his palm. It was a wide, round, golden medallion. Demon runes scored deeply into its soft surface and writhing madly, beginning to burn with clear, crimson radiance. I turned quickly to see the beast behind me. It was low and sinuous. Heat smoking off its glassy obsidian pelt, its eyes a flaming carnivorous orange. It wasn't like the other hellhounds I'd seen. Those smooth basalt creatures with fiery snouts. This one had a longer pointed muzzle with viciously curved teeth made of volcanic glass and wings with sharp daggered feathers. The windows gave up under the onslaught.
Game, set, match.
His hand came forward with a sweet economy of motion, and he tossed the gold medallion toward the table, an extension of the motion bringing him into an effortless lunge. I threw myself down and past Zaj, colliding with the iron chair, bruising hard, tipping it over and going down in a tangle of arms and legs with ease. Jaff met the hellhound. He struck it down. Suddenly, Jaff had both silvery guns out. He twisted in midair, somehow landing lightly as a cat on the table. McKinley's hand sank into the skein of my hair and pulled me up. Suddenly, the world turned sideways. The medallion flared. Demon protections laid in the room shattered. I launched myself. Furushin's hilt socked into my hand. Eve rose like a wave from the wreck of the iron chair, spun on her toes, and bolted for the stairs. I whirled and sprinted after her, hysterical strength filling unruly limbs.
Valentine! Valentine, stop it!
Sorry, Sunshine, but you work for the demon that just threw a wrench in the works. My priority now is getting Eve out of the fire zone.
Eve slammed open an access door. I was close behind. It was a stairwell, the steps spiraling up. I lagged under the weight of effort, but then I saw the door above me.
Roof access. Good plan. Hope she has a hover stash or this could get real ugly.
McKinley's footsteps pounded on the stairs behind me.
At least I hope it's McKinley. I'm fairly sure I can outrun him.
I tumbled out of the door onto a high-altitude platform. I almost ran into Eve. Her golden hand shot out and caught my upper arm, digging in with fingers like steel claws. The sudden stop almost tore my arm out of my socket. The landing platform spread out like the petal of a flower, glowing a pale amber to match the rest of the tower. McKinley plowed through the door behind us. I brought my sword around in an easy semicircle, blade cutting the air into the ready position. My scabbard was in my left hand, and I turned my wrist to brace it, using it as a shield and a potential weapon.
Eve! You go! I'll take care of this!
There on the platform, with a laser rifle and two plas guns pointed at us, were Van and Lucas Villalobos.
They haven't come up to meet with me. They're on Jaframel's side.